Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hello, Egg Chasers. We're back again. I know, this is unprecedented.
We have four podcasts out this week, yeah, if I put Ruby Dungeon on our feed.
The number of times people have said the word unprecedented is the most unprecedented thing that's happened in 2020, but this is unprecedented.
It is unprecedented.
A fourth podcast in 3 days. Yeah. But there we go, we're back in the Rugby Dungeon. I'm Tim, JB is right there.
Hello.
Fresh from rugby training.
Rugby training's back, yeah. Well, some teams started up on Thursday, if you're lucky enough to do so. So we started off tonight because we train once a week. It was awesome.
Good.
It was awesome.
Good, 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 good. And we're back without Phil, who's away on business. And basically he's getting a bit of tier two pub action, I reckon.
He's absolutely getting London tier two pub action. It's a disgrace. He's
probably getting some Westminster pub action.
Yeah, probably. On our dime.
Yeah, you're right as well. Or at least subsidised.
Yeah, boys, you stay in. I'm going out boozing in Westminster.
We are here because the stories in the news today just demanded that that we are. So we're going to cover two main things in this quick emergency podcast. The departure of Steve Diamond from Sale Sharks and the impending concussion lawsuit involving 70 rugby players or former rugby players and counting. So we'll get into that meatier and a more emotive one second, although actually this first one is really emotive for you, JB. how are you? How have you taken the news?
Reflection. I'm pretty disappointed. I'm not going to lie. I'm pretty disappointed. Pretty disappointed. Well, what about you?
I am. I'm massively disappointed. Steve Diamond is Sale Sharks to the core. He was he played just up the road from where we're sat right now,
yep,
at Trafford Metrovic. Played for his local club, Sale Sharks, at the old Haywood Road. Was very successful as well. A successful businessman who didn't need to go into coaching. Certainly didn't. But his over the last 10 years, he's really brought a bit of stability to the club and definitely an identity. The club has very much been in his identity.
Yes, quite.
I wonder if that's maybe part of it. So the first question, the first thing I want to talk about is like why. And I think we're probably only going to be able to speculate here because the timing of it says to me this was in absolutely no way planned, anticipated, or anything that anyone, Steve Diamond included, was expecting to be doing.
I have got to admit, I had inklings. Nothing substantial enough for me to air publicly. Nor would I, to be fair, because until it's confirmed, it's not confirmed. But I did have inklings. It's my view that there are two characters here. At Sale Sharks.
Just by process of elimination, can we just rule out that it was anything to do with how the team were performing on the pitch?
Yes.
Yeah. Well, let's rule that out completely.
Yeah, it's not that.
No.
There's two characters basically involved in the story. I know them both reasonably well, and that would be Simon Orange, who's one of the owners, and it's Steve Diamond.
Who was, or maybe still is, one of the part owners.
Yes, who was also a part owner. And I think it's important that you mention them both in this, because they're both, you know, ferociously capable individuals. And I think when you have two guys, and I've missed out Jed Mason, who would be the other owner here, who, again, is a phenomenal individual in his own right. And I'm not just saying that because I'm a sycophant. That doesn't mean I'm not a sycophant, but that's not the reason I'm saying it.
Two things can be true at the same time.
Yes, two things can be absolutely true at the same time. But when you've got two guys like Steve Diamond and Simon Orange, I mean, they're ferociously competitive, they're ferociously capable, intelligent, and sometimes they just want to go in different directions. Now, I'm not saying that is the case, and I know that they have parted amicably. This is not, you know, some...
Amicably means one party has written a check big enough that the other one has gone without making a mistake, changing hands.
I mean, I'm absolutely sure that it will be amicable enough for the checks to change hands. But I honestly think that is basically it. I mean, there's, you know, two very, very capable guys.
There's a new chief executive came in, a role which Steve Diamond has had in the past.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly, and I don't think
that's coincidental. Surely, if you were just taking a kind of brief detective's look at it, you'd go: new CEO comes in, Steve Diamond, who was a very, very big character in that club, is now gone.
Yeah,
that it stands to reason that.
Yeah, so you know, whereas I'm absolutely, I'm absolutely a Steve Diamond fan, and I continue to be. I'm not that worried about the future of the club. So, yes. Say if Rob Baxter walked out the door in Exeter, I would assume...
Particularly in these uncertain times, you'd think, oh dear, Exeter and...
Yeah.
Yeah.
I would assume there'd be... I mean, actually, maybe that's a good comparison, because Rob Baxter would be a serious loss, but I think the Exeter structures and systems might be strong enough to replace him. I certainly think that they're strong enough at Sale to replace him, but it's going to be one hell of an effort. So whoever comes in next, and that's a problem that Sale Sharks are going to have.
Robert Dupree, the coach?
Goodness me. I don't think they need any more Duprees. That's for sure. Mm. So whoever replaces him, it'll be Deacon in the short term. But then longer term, they're going to have someone with... maybe it's not one person. It might have to be a team of people, to be honest, because he did so much there. It might need to be two or three people.
Yeah. I'm disappointed from the point of view that there are so... I mean, there are lots of great characters in the game, but there are few characters as big or as charismatic as Steve Diamond, and he's great for the game. And from a totally selfish point of view, when I know that I have a Sale Sharks game that I'm working on and I'm going to be... interviewing Dimes, there's an extra little bit of energy.
Yeah.
Not just because it's, you know, the it's only a 10-minute taxi ride to the ground rather than travelling anywhere, but just knowing, not knowing what's going to happen with Dimes. And I've had some absolutely amazing little ding-dongs with him in the past. And I hope I haven't done my last post or pre-match interview with Steve Diamond.
Well... Maybe we should suggest to BT Sport that they get him on the broadcast team.
Mate, I've said it to them. I've said it to people before. I think he'd be absolute dynamite on the telly. I do.
Oh, it'd be brilliant. He would be brilliant. He's one of those characters who, as you just pointed out there, tremendously charismatic. You know, when he wants to be charismatic, and I think the beauty of him as a character is. It's just the range. It's the range that he has. I mean, I've never met anyone like it, frankly, who's got all. I mean, let's not sugarcoat it. He does have some sharper side to him, shall we say?
Oh yeah. No, I'm always prepared. So when I'm chatting to Steve Diamond, I always have an extra, maybe half dozen extra questions in the back of my mind in case he gives me a monosyllabic no. Yeah. No. Which he's prone to do from time to time. Yeah. But then he'll come out with an absolutely corking one-liner. then he'll adamantly deny a player's not coming, who then signs 2 days later.
Yeah.
It's just great times. But
so I guess we should reflect a bit about him, really.
He's not died.
Yeah.
I hope it's not a health issue as well. That's one other possibility. That's one of the things I thought. But I really hope it's not that, obviously. Yeah.
So... if you think about what he's achieved at Sale over 10 years, it's phenomenal. He came in after John Mitchell, and that was not good. That was far, far from good. He had a very limited budget for the longest time. I do genuinely think, without Steve Diamond, we don't have Premiership rugby in the Northwest. I don't think it exists. Sale would have been relegated a long time ago.
Well, they might have had a year in the Championship.
Do you think they come back, though? Do you think there's the interest?
Yeah.
Maybe they
Maybe not. Well, there's not the interest now. 10 years after Steve Diamond, there isn't. They don't have many people going to watch and things like that. But there's various other things that they're trying to solve in other ways, relocating the club, all the rest of it. They're trying to do that. But
You know, he's done some fantastic things with recruitment. I mean, Faf de Klerk, it's no exaggeration to say Faf de Klerk's career was on a downward spiral when he signed for Sale. And then from that, he's got the Dupree boys. He's made some very smart signings elsewhere. Yeah. The academy is pumping out lads like Ben and Tom Curry. God knows how many more there are in there, but I can tell you...
The James brothers.
Yeah, there is a lot.
Yeah.
And then finally, when the club needs new backers, he was involved in getting the backers that they have now, who are just as important.
Yeah. One player I would pick out, actually... Vadim Kobolash, for example.
Yes.
A Moldovan prop.
You'll do.
Moldovan, was he Moldovan?
Yeah, Moldovan.
Moldovan prop. Plucked him out of nowhere, helped him become a top flight prop, and off he goes to Bordeaux and has a great time.
Yeah, I think he's still playing.
Yeah, still playing. So, I think you're right. With a limited budget, he was incredibly good at squeezing value out of players. That's what I think he'll find disappointing, is that they haven't had the greatest start to the season, albeit they've won two games, but... everything was set, and this particular year, when they've got such a big, deep squad, and so many games coming thick and fast, I think it is all set for whoever takes over. Just to,
I'm not sure if it is. You know, is it not like the Raiders without Al Davis?
We will see. We will see.
I've got my fingers crossed for Alex Sanderson.
That is a great shout.
Isn't that a good shout?
That is a good shout. Jim Mallinder?
Not so much. But
I think Jim Mallinder could be a shout.
Oh, I don't know. The way it petered out at Northampton.
He's class, though. He's good.
He is class. What I don't like in rugby, or in football, I should say, is the same names going round and round in circles.
Well, here's another one I would love to... I don't think you'll be able to lure him back because he seems very happy, but Richard Cockerell.
That is a good shout. I just think that the fire and brimstone that Sanderson brings, and he was at one point the youngest captain in the Premiership when he played for Sale. That's the one that I, as a neutral, I think we'd all like to see.
Yeah, I think you're right. You and other neutrals would love to see that particular one. I just think Alex Sanderson is going to want to be part of the resurrection,
the Championship,
the full story. Mm-hmm. No, he's going to want to be part of the full journey. From the bottom back to the top again. He'll want to climb the mountain with Saracens again, I suspect.
Yeah. It's interesting, isn't it? Because, say if he did get it, you would have Saracens not only coaching themselves when they come back, but coaching Harlequins, mm-hmm. coaching Leicester Tigers,
yeah.
and potentially coaching Sale Sharks. You know, it's probably the closest thing you'd get to a modern-day NFL coaching tree.
You're right. Mm. So, one to watch. But, I hope it's not the last we've seen of Steve Diamond involved in rugby, because as I said at the outset, I worry that it might be, because there was clearly more than the rugby with Sale Sharks. He loves that club.
Oh, he really does.
He really loves that club. So I suspect we maybe have seen the last of him in terms of hands-on involvement in rugby, because he's a very successful businessman aside.
I can't imagine he comes back into rugby in the Premiership. No way is he taking a DOR job. That's my opinion. I don't know. I've not spoken to him.
I tend to agree.
I can see him doing TV. I think that's the I can see him doing some sort of consulting role. I can see him going into tier two. If someone paid him enough money to coach Georgia for 3 or 4 years, I can definitely see him in that sort of role.
Yeah.
He'd have to go to an international setup, I think, in order to lure him back. But I'm not even sure, but not a top flight one. He needs to be the absolute main man. And I don't think there's anyone in the Premiership, ownership-wise, outside of Sale Sharks, who'd be brave enough to have him.
Mm. I think I tend to agree with you on that.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High-quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Right, let's move on to the second big story then, which there were rumblings of it over the last few days. Confirmation and some flesh put on the bones of a litigation case that is pending involving, as it stands, 70 former rugby players, professional rugby players, which is suing World Rugby, the RFU, the WRU, and other various other bodies. I think that may be it.
Yeah.
For brain injuries caused by concussions through their playing career.
Yeah.
And I think anyone could agree, and we'll dig into a little bit of the minutiae and the nuance and the substantive parts of it, but just on a human part of it, hearing Steve Thompson say that sometimes he forgets his wife's name. It's unimaginable. Well, no, it's not unimaginable because we've all had, I've certainly had members of my family with dementia, but to get early on onset dementia in your 40s and occasionally not be able to remember your wife's name, or if you're Alex Pop and go for a bike ride on a little loop near your house that's very, very familiar and have a kind of blackout where suddenly you don't know where you are and how to get home, it's
horrendous.
Harrowing.
If you watch that, and I think it was it Popham who could well be in a home by 50, and you think, Jesus Christ. And how much of this is a product of a sport which is relatively safe, meeting modern day sports science and strength and conditioning? And maybe we were never to know about this until it happened because, well, we'd never had professional players. And as those professionals got more and more powerful, we need to really step back and think, bloody hell, what have we done? If there's 70 guys lodging this case, my guess is there could be many, many more. I don't know enough about it to say how serious it is or when it started or or even what the solutions are, but certainly in the professional game that we need to take some action, but I do not know. Well, I have a few ideas, but I certainly don't know exactly what the answer is.
Yeah, trying to parse this out is difficult, isn't it? Because I think with any contact sport, you have to accept there will be a risk of serious injury to any part of your body, including your head. That goes for boxing, mixed martial arts, football, rugby, you name it, ice hockey, NFL. There's all of this. And I think as with all of this, it comes down to the calculation of risks. Yep. Now, a lot of people brought up the NFL concussion litigation that happened sort of around
about
9 years ago. Well, there are similarities. So what happened there was a lot of players, I think something like some 1,800 players across the league over many years, had a class action lawsuit seeking damages for CTE, this brain injury. And the similarity is the type of sport and the type of injury. The difference is how the NFL arrived at having to shell out $1 billion to support these players medically, and continuing monies being contributed to support other players who retire and then get these same symptoms. What the NFL did, when you look into it, is they denied there was an issue for years and years. Uh-huh. They outright said, things like, they put this sort of doctor out in front and pushed him up in front of a microphone, and he said, you are more likely to have worse symptoms if you withdraw a player from the game, if they have an injury, than if you let them keep playing.
What now?
I'm not even joking.
Wow.
I'm not even joking. So this is the kind of thing the NFL did. For some 4 years, they denied there was any issue. They said these things, which now you look back, you think are absolutely ridiculous.
Mm.
And they did some really, really awful things like that. And so when they settled their £1 billion case, they still did it without prejudice. They still said, oh, we're just contributing money to the medical people because we care about these guys. We're not accepting any liability here. So the NFL haven't accepted any liability. And I think that's a critical thing, because when you're bringing a court case forward, when you're suing someone, you have to have an injury. And that's a technical term in law, but it also applies literally in this case. You have to have an injury and you have to have liability to then get a relief.
Yeah.
And the liability is the interesting one, because over the last number of years, World Rugby have, as we've seen, brought in some changes. So it's just a question of, is that I think it'll be that middle ground before World Rugby brought those in, and how and since, and an assessment of how negligent people have been.
Yeah, call me a cynic, but I believe World Rugby have seen this coming for a long time.
Oh, I totally agree.
I think they've been planning for it, preparing for it. And I don't mean that in a malicious way, by the way. I mean they've seen...
Self-preservation, of course.
Well, they've just seen people come off injured and thought, bloody hell, what's happening in the NFL? This brain injury thing is real. We need to take action now. Because if we're not taking action, at least we can demonstrate that we've done something and that we're taking it seriously. Whereas the NFL thing was, no, oh, actually, yes. So I think they've seen this coming, and it's almost like an inevitability. And they've said, right, we'll make the changes preemptively. I think you're right in what you say. It is going to be different to the NFL case.
I do agree with that. Yeah, the NFL were, from my eyes, and again, they've accepted no liability, but it seems like they were negligent in...
It sounds like more than negligent.
More than negligent, that they were proactively... denying that there was any issue.
Yeah. So do you want to hear my controversial view on this?
Go on.
I really struggle, in the same way I struggle with nations being able to control who they can pay and who they can't pay, and who you can play for, and this, that, and the other. I also struggle with the ethics around professional players. I know that sounds absolutely nuts. But when I put on my boots, okay, first of all, I don't have access to professional conditioning, and also I'm not a super athlete. I'm not saying I compare myself to these boys, but when I put my boots on, I am making a judgment about my health and safety and going out there to play. And I strongly maintain that is my choice, and I've done the calculations, and I think the risk of rugby for myself is absolutely fine.
Yeah, some people calculate a risk and don't get on a plane.
Yes, exactly right.
And they make their personal choice.
I get far more out of rugby than there is risk, basically. Now, when you start adding money into a situation, that element of you making a calculation just about your welfare starts to get a bit diluted.
Yeah.
So if you offered me a fiver right now to hit myself in the face with a hammer, I could either take it or not take it. But, you know, I don't think there's too much coercion. When you start offering me like £1 million to do it, you start thinking like, well, okay, £1 million, I'm going to suffer a brain injury, but then I do get to provide for my family, and, you know, I might not suffer a brain injury. And I think it's really dicey when we've got players who can earn literally millions of quid over a career. And it's a fun career. And you get all the social kudos, and you get all of this stuff. And we say, you know, and then they might get a brain injury. And I think we've got to think really carefully about the ethics around professionalism in general. I know that sounds absolutely insane, because you can't not make people professional. We can't go back to the amateur era. But there are some fundamental issues in the sport which I feel uncomfortable with. And one of them is, you know, is it okay? I mean, if you don't want to play because you think, bloody, like Shantain Harpe.
Yeah.
And you think, if I get one more blow to the head here, you know, I'm going to be out cold. I need to hide this, because if I tell someone I can't earn my £300,000 and I can't support my family and I can't pay my mortgage, that is the most horrendous situation I can possibly think of being in.
Yeah, and I remember lying about concussions when it came to going through the county, Southwest, and then England trials. I completely lied, because I had a series of really bad concussions to the point where, like, I couldn't remember anything about the day before. At one point, I had a girlfriend at school, and I had this vague recollection that we might have broken up. And I had to call her.
Oh, you told me this. Yeah,
I had to call her on the Sunday night and go, look, not sorry to be funny, are we together still or not? Like, I couldn't remember, and that was 3 days before we'd broken up. And
after.
I completely lied about it. So just because I was so desperate to go to the South of England trial, and I just lied.
Yeah. So if you go to an A League game, right, which I have done, admittedly, Norse. What you'll see is the senior players who get to play in the A-League just not interested. They're not interested. And the players that are not senior players are playing their hearts up because they are just hoping that maybe Dimes is there or Dean Richards. So then what you have is these players, say if you've started a handful of games but then you're suffering from concussion, you know there is a whole academy beneath you who will happily take your 80 grand a year. Happily. And they're just waiting for you to pull up injured. So we've got some serious ethical questions to answer around paying players and how we deal with it.
My brother was a championship and then premiership player, and I know that he just took it wasn't concussion based, but he just took painkillers, had injections regularly.
I mean, that's the other
just
thing.
To get through games.
Yeah, that's the other thing, like the painkiller problem. I'm not saying it's a problem like it is in the NFL, but I imagine a lot of guys are on a lot of pain medication continually.
Well, yeah, so there's something very visceral when you think about someone having a brain injury, and you hear like Alex Popham saying he couldn't work out how to get home, and Steve Thompson forgot the name of his wife. That's just heartbreaking stuff. But there are a lot of guys, ex-players, additionally, who can't get a good night's sleep for. The
back pain or something.
For the 50 years they're alive after they stop playing, that they can't get to sleep properly because their shoulders bad, or they can't pick their kid up in the way they'd like.
So my thought on this now is, well, first of all, we need less professional players. We need far, far less because, well, I'll explain why. The other thing we need is not necessarily a change of law, overhaul of the laws, because I'm quite happy with the game as it is, particularly at amateur level, where I suspect it's just about safe enough.
Yeah,
I think it's safe enough.
I mean, I'm game on for people to do some research into that, but my suspicions would be that I agree with you that where you don't have these super athletes, you won't have this. The level of risk will exponentially drop at the amateur level.
And lastly, I think the only way to solve this is limiting professional games and limiting the amount of time that players can play. So whether that is 10 games a season, I mean, that sounds ridiculous, but NFL guys are only on 16 games a season, and I think that's too much. I've said this for God knows how long. We need to limit the games, and not only limit the games, we need to have less players so we can pay the players that we have more money to accept this risk. And also, I guess the cost of rugby is going to have to go up in terms of how we deal with players that then get hurt. Mm. I mean, if you think about it, in this tiny country of 70 million, we've got a premiership with 12 full-time professional teams, and we've got the Pro 14. Combine those two together, you've nearly got as many teams as play in the NFL.
Yeah,
you know, that's madness. You don't need that many teams, that many games. Now, I love to watch the game, but I just think we need to limit the amount of professional rugby that we have.
I think I disagree with you to some degree. I don't think they need to necessarily play less games, although I understand why you say that.
Mm.
I think a change they could easily make, which actually some clubs have already implemented without it being come down from on high. And in fact, Steve Diamond was one of the ones that brought this in, was just massive reduction in the amount of contact through training.
100%.
Because Steve Thompson himself said, do you know what? It's less the Saturday. It's more in the week. It's more the amount of contact you do in a week. Because if you think about the number of repetitions you do in a week, the number of tackles in an elite game has gone up from the first World Cup to the World Cup just gone is over a 32-year period.
Mm.
and it's the number of tackles has gone up by about a factor of 3 or 4, I think. So there was something like 90 tackles a game in 1987, and there's like 230, 240 tackles a game. Nevertheless, the number of collisions in games alone is much less, I reckon, than the average player would get between in the few training days you have, perhaps.
But I mean, there are lads out there who could potentially play. I mean, there are limits to games you can play full stop, actually. But you could play 30 odd weeks of the year.
Yeah.
At the highest level, that is insane.
Potentially. I don't think I would drop it as low as you're suggesting.
My feeling is about 15 games.
I know, I don't like that.
Yeah, 15 games doesn't mean 15 weeks, though. So, I mean, if you have enough teams, you could have, you know, playing every other week. Mm. You know, there's lots of ways to do this so we have more rugby for a longer period of time.
Well, okay, so that's one approach. Mm. It is the limiting the amount of game time. I would try and reduce the amount of incidents of contact you have by a massive reduction in the amount of contact in training.
Yep.
That would be my approach to that first, before I started massively reducing the number of games. The other aspect is the style of the game. And again, it's the unintended consequences. They solved one problem, arguably made another problem worse. They solved the issue of the scrum engagement, which, yes, there were people who were really sadly... Matt Hampson, great example.
Yep.
Who Leicester Tigers have done some incredible work supporting after his spinal injury. He was an England junior player and had a spinal injury. And those spinal injuries, touch wood, and thank goodness, are much, much less prevalent.
Yeah, that's a good point. We used to hear a lot about them, didn't we?
Yeah.
All the time. We don't so much now.
No, we don't, because they are, again, thankfully, and let's hope that continues, that they're not the issue they were to the amount they were. However, in changing the scrum to the point where we talk about these reset scrums, and you might have a 3-minute period of an 80-minute game where everyone stood around waiting for one scrum to happen, that is part of the reason why you get these giant men. When you get a 3-minute rest every 10 minutes, you can be 2 stone heavier than you otherwise would be.
What do you make, right? And this is a bad example. I think I'm going somewhere with this. But what do you make of having like academy teams and England under 21s and all the rest of it? I kind of think that you know, when you're getting into these players younger and younger and younger, and you're developing them with more and more modern sports science to get them bigger, I wonder if it'd just be worth sacking off everything which is not professional rugby at the top level, and saying, yeah, you come in smaller. We'll get rid of the England under 21 setup, and we'll get rid of Wales under 20s, and you know, just get rid of it all. Go play at your clubs, and if you're good enough, you can come, and you'll come in as little scrawny guys. Wow. And then once you're in the club setup, by all means, lift as many weights as you can.
Except well. Well,
there, yeah, again, the private schools will still be churning out monsters, won't they?
The private schools will still be churning out monsters, and so will Fiji, Samoa and Tonga.
Yeah, I don't think they're going to change their ways down in South Africa. But no. Actually, this might be the jolt, which we need to say, hang on a minute, how do we settle this down?
But I just go back to it. Ball in playtime is key. You can keep the game...
Well, like eliminating the knock-on.
Do you know what? Oh my goodness.
There you go.
World Rugby, will you finally listen to us after years of banging on about it and at least trial it somewhere? Trial it in one of these provincial South African tournaments or in the under 20s or something. Try no knock-ons. It sounds ridiculous. Me and Phil both sat here and laughed at you the first time you said it.
There we go.
But the more I think about it, I mean, deliberate knock-ons, still a penalty as they always have been and always are. Yeah. But if it leads directly to a try, then maybe you don't. But yes, do that.
There you go.
Do that.
Yeah. I do wonder where this will end up, because you look at the reaction that this story has got, and people are always saying, let's progressively make it safer and safer and safer. I kind of see that. I certainly see, well, it depends what you mean by safer.
Yeah, well, just to draw a slight parallel with what we've seen this year with coronavirus, there are some people who you sort of feel that if anyone dies of this particular respiratory illness, then that's one too many. And I understand the principle of saying that, but it's not
true.
It's not
It's not how things work.
It's not how things work. And if that sounds callous, then I'm callous. But that's not how things work. And people, 14,000 people die every week or every month or something like that.
A lot of people die from a lot of things, and generally speaking, it's worth it.
And some of them are respiratory illnesses. So inevitably, if there's a different respiratory illness.
Car crashes are dreadful. But yeah. Nowhere near as dreadful as having no roads. So, you know, that...
There you go. There's a good analogy. So it's about balancing those risks. Yeah. And I don't think we need to completely overhaul rugby. And we don't need to just... I am concerned that it could be too reactionary. And if there's a time just to be calm and really take a moment to think this one through, it's now.
Yeah. The other problem is, how do you argue it? Because if I think about the risk, this is for me personally, right, at amateur level. I'm not talking about the pros.
I think you should stress that, JB, because some people quite like to take you out of context.
You know what? I'm glad you mentioned that. I usually wouldn't mention a podcast name, but I will. I'll mention these guys. They're called Line Break, and they decided that they would take a screenshot of something which I said, which explicitly says the pro game aside. I made a point when I made a tweet. I was talking about myself. And I think the risks that I take on the rugby pitch are worth it. And I even put in the tweet, the pro game aside, because it's a very, very different
thing. So you've said two things there. You said the pro game is a separate conversation. Let's park that one over there. And you've said, I'm talking about my calculation of my risk.
No one else.
Versus reward.
Me, right? These scumbags. And they're absolutely... No, this is... If you see a story about a professional athlete who's suffered a brain injury, and your first thought is, I cannot wait to get on Twitter to score social media points so I can get three more listeners to my terrible podcast, you're a scumbag. You're nothing more than an absolute scumbag. So, I mean, some people hear about CTE and all this stuff, and they do amazing things. Kevin Sinfield ran 7 marathons in 7 days.
Do you see the times of his marathons, by the way? Unbelievable.
He's raised £2 million.
Yeah, that's incredible.
These utter losers, who I guess have never played the game, they're a bunch of guys that have met, would you believe, well, I can believe, over Reddit, and they're not even real friends, as in, like, we actually met as real friends. They're online...
In a rugby club, JB.
In a rugby club, which I doubt they've ever been to, right? They have launched this podcast, and as soon as they heard that these guys, the guys that we celebrate and watch, have got a brain injury, they use that as an excuse to go through someone's tweets. I just think, is this the standard of the debate in rugby now? That you hear something tragic and you use it to further your own ends. They are the scum of the earth. I just can't... I've never been so angry with someone ever.
Yeah, I mean, I look at it and go that they don't deserve your anger or anything, to be honest.
When I was growing up, I always thought I'd have an enemy worthy of myself. Someone who looked like The Rock. But I tend to just attract these absolute losers. I can't understand it for the life of me.
Maybe it's because I work in broadcasting. I think it's part of the only way you can get on in radio or telly or whatever for long enough is to not really care what people think. But the one constant in the people that seem to be most vocal about you or me or whatever, the one thing they seem to have in common is they have a blog or a podcast or something that's much, much less influential and much, much smaller.
Substantially.
I think there may be a thing going on there, JB. Yeah. So I wouldn't give them any thought. I think it's envy. But when someone attacks your character your integrity...
My appeal is simply this. If you do look like The Rock and you want to be my enemy and you want... give me an adversary worthy of myself, please. That is my little rant. Seldom have I been so angry about such scum.
I think this lawsuit may well hinge on is what... rugby has done as a sport over the past however many years sufficient that they can avoid an accusation of negligence, or have they been negligent? Was it that they actually had the best of intentions but didn't know any better? Was it that they actually knew they should have been doing more but didn't do more? I think that's basically where this may hinge.
You've got to say they probably haven't, but you have to counter that with they haven't. I feel sorry for them because they haven't. But like, how would you know? Now, what is the piece of research that says you need to do X, Y, Z? I don't know. Whatever they could have done, it seems to be obvious by the fact there's 70 guys with severe brain injuries that it wasn't enough.
Yeah, well, I suspect maybe in the case, as with the case with NFL, perhaps rugby, which, you know, there's been a lot of talk of rugby values in recently. I would imagine that liability or negligence or whatever aside, that the sport and the powers that be would want to support these players who, whether it was avoidable in the moment or not, they would want to support guys that are going through this sort of trouble and put measures in place to try and support other people who exit the game and then have similar symptoms. Because it is a big concern. And one of the things I thought of, and I don't want to speculate or get into it, but one of the things I thought of was just suddenly Christoph Dominici popped in my head. Because the number of retired NFL players who've taken their own life,
yep,
which then when autopsies and stuff have been done,
CTE,
they've had CTE injuries, and it can have the number of divorces that have happened, and like people have lost, people have had a head injury, you know, not necessarily just in rugby, but people have had a severe head injury, maybe in a car crash or something, and then their personality has completely changed. They've lost their job, lost their wife, and their so it's something that still, even now, and this is what, you know, a decade on from the big NFL lawsuit, we still don't totally understand. They still don't totally understand why and how it happens. They think it's these proteins in the brain called tau. They think that it's to do with these proteins that happen maybe sometimes when a blood vessel is blocked up or something like that. And so they still don't, my point being, there are people that still don't understand it. So,
No, because I guess if you didn't understand it, that potentially you could cure it. And that would be the ultimate, wouldn't it? I mean, I don't know, actually. Would it? Would suffering more brain injuries be the ultimate if we knew that we could cure it? You probably wouldn't want to suffer them in the first place, I guess. But yeah, that's the other hope, isn't it? That we get some sort of medical intervention.
Yeah.
Which, you never know.
It's some really, really sad stories. And I think we're going to...
I worry. I'm not going to lie. I worry about the future of rugby. You know, I've never worried so much ever. And I think it's justified. Just looking at... let's just see. Let's just see how this case works itself out first. Yeah. And what changes the powers that be make. You know, maybe the whole COVID situation means that we can, to coin a phrase, reset... reset the game in a different way. I've got no idea.
It does feel slightly when you think about all the different factors that are playing on this. Not even so much this particular thing we're talking about now, but just when you think about the game as a whole, with everything else going on, the context it's in, the financial issues, the fact that participation has been dropping for years and years.
Yes,
the fact that schools are playing rugby less and less.
What school in the land?
I know. Well, yeah.
Is going to play it now.
I know. It feels slightly existential. What's happening at the moment?
Yep, I completely agree, and I have no good answers for it. Where does the money come from to fund all this?
I don't know. I don't know about that, JB. I think just going back to something. If nothing else, as we move forward, I think an insurance approach could be taken. There's a pool, there's a fund, which then if retired players end up having these certain symptoms, then there is a pool of money available. Like with the military, who's another group of people that suffer injuries just like this.
Yes.
And there are benevolent funds, and there's charitable, there's military charities and stuff that work with people that, have had injuries like this. Perhaps there's ways of cultivating that across the globe.
More to point though, where does the money come from if these players are successful in their claim?
Well, yeah.
I mean, that do they fold the unions? I mean, is it going to be, you know, if they were successful against the home unions after the battering that they've had from COVID? I don't see how they pay it.
Well, the settlement in the NFL for comparison was 1,800 players and ongoing. Numbers who may need it, and that I don't know how the money was spread, but that amounted to 750 million pounds.
Okay.
But I don't know how... Maybe that was a...
Is that it? 750 million quid?
750 million quid.
Is that... That's nothing. It's peanuts. If you think about it, I mean, how many players are there?
There was 1,800 in the initial case, but there was, I think that was on the basis that they would need money for more people as and when they happened.
Yeah, that's nothing. I mean, if you think about it, the RFU was turning over about 200 million. So you're looking at, what, three times turnover of the RFU. For the NFL, that's tiny.
So that was 1,800 players. This case is 70 players.
Yeah, but what I'm saying, for the NFL, I mean, you know, some quick radio maths. What's that like?
Oh, where's Phil when you need him?
Yeah, what's that? Just like about half a million quid each?
What 750 million divided by 1,800?
Let's just edit that out.
Hold on. I've only got one hand free, so I'll just do this. Hold on. Hey Google, what's 750 million divided by 1,800?
The answer is 416,000.
Half a million.
Thank God.
Well done, JB.
Jesus. I'm a financial advisor. Yeah, 400,000 quid. And they expect more to come in. If you think about, you know, restricted mobility, changes to your house, loss of income, all I'm telling you now, 400,000 quid is nothing. Inflation alone. If you've got 400,000 quid, which you need to live on for the rest of your life because you need to pay your care fees or your nursing fees, that is basically nothing. Mm. You're going to need a couple of million quid. Minimum. And I can tell you that I just know that. Mm. What a happy podcast.
Yeah. Well, do you know what? It needed to be... it does need to be spoken about and... Yeah, I was just thinking. One of the things that got me, and I can totally understand him saying it, but seeing a man who Steve Thompson won the World Cup, him saying he couldn't remember, he watches the games and he sees himself and he can't remember being in Australia. Mm. Heartbreaking. But he said he wouldn't be happy for his kids to play rugby.
Yeah, I've heard a few people say that. I've heard a few NFL players saying that their kids won't play American football. Mm. Yeah, so it does feel like some action's got to be taken, but I don't know what it is.
Yeah, well, we don't have to have all the answers. We can just start a conversation and illuminate us. If you've got any thoughts, you think we're right on some things, wrong on some things, chip in good faith, of course.
In good faith, or just take it. You know, use this for an excuse to go through my Twitter and take screenshots. I mean, that would be the obvious and good. I mean, in fact. That's what you should do. Go and subscribe to Rugby Line Break because they are so desperate for listeners. They would appreciate the extra five listeners.
They would. That'd be nice to them there. Don't even think about them, JB. They don't deserve it.
Seldom have I been this angry.
Right, well, anyway, we are at Rugby Podcast on Twitter. He's at Jay Beardmore.
I am.
I'm at Cocker.
Oh, one last thing.
Yeah,
one last thing.
Go on.
And this is a little bit more of a happy thing, I guess. I've been on email duty again. So I would like to say, we're not going to read your emails now, but we do read them. I read everyone in detail. So thank you to Alex Butler. Thank you to Oliver Cousins. Thank you for Ethan Banfield. There are others, including someone called Stephen Jones, but not that Stephen Jones.
Excellent.
We read them all. I really enjoy your emails, so keep them coming. Contact eggchasers@gmail.com.
And in fact, we'll have a correspondence segment Sunday's show.
Some of these are absolutely brilliant. Right. I mean, they are absolutely brilliant. They're good thought provoking pieces. We're not ignoring you.
Yeah,
I
do like the emails as well because the 280 characters you can't develop a point.
Yep.
You can't. So if you've got something you want to say, whether it's to maybe spark a thought with us, an idea of something we should talk about, or just, you just want to throw something at the wall and see what sticks, contacteggchasers@gmail.com. We would love to hear from you. And we'll be back, the three of us, on Sunday. See you then.
Yep. See you then.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.